The fifth Sunday of Lent. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John, chapter 8, verses 1 to 11. Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. At daybreak he appeared in the temple again, and as all the people came to him, he sat down and began to teach them. The scribes and Pharisees brought a woman along who had been caught committing adultery, and making her stand there in full view of everybody, they said to Jesus, "Master, this woman was caught in the very act of committing adultery, and Moses had ordered us in the law to condemn women like this to death by stoning. What have you to say?" They asked him this as a test, looking for something to use against him. But Jesus bent down and started writing on the ground with his finger. As they persisted with their question, he looked up and said, "If there is one of you who has not sinned, let him be the first to throw a stone at her." Then he bent down and wrote on the ground again. When they heard this, they went away, one by one, beginning with the eldest, until Jesus was left alone with the woman, who remained standing there. He looked up and said, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?"
"No one, sir," she replied.
"Neither do I condemn you," said Jesus. "Go away and don't sin any more."
It is the third year of Jesus' public life, a time drawing closer to his passion and death. After spending a night in the Mount of Olives, Jesus goes to Jerusalem, where he speaks to a crowd of people at the temple. Maria Valtorta takes up the story. Jesus is the only one to be still, while all the others, standing around this or that master, are walking up and down. The people around him make way to let a small group of gesticulating, venomous scribes and Pharisees pass. They are spurting venom from their eyes, their livid faces and their mouths. What vipers they are! Rather than lead, they are dragging a woman about 30 years old. Her hair is ruffled, her dress is untidy, and she is weeping as if she had been ill-treated. They throw her down at Jesus' feet as if she were a bundle of rags or a dead body, and she remains there, crouched, with her face hidden and resting on her arms, which are like a cushion between her face and the ground. "Master, this woman was caught in the very act of committing adultery. Her husband loved her and ensured that she lacked nothing. She was the queen in her house. And she has been unfaithful to him, because she is a vicious, ungrateful sinner and profaner. She is an adulteress, and as such, she is to be stoned. Moses ordered so. In his law, he orders us to stone such women like unclean animals. And they are unclean, because they betray faith and the man who loves and takes care of them. And because they always crave for lust, they are worse than prostitutes, because without the sting of need, they give themselves to satisfy their lewdness. They are corrupted and they corrupt. They are to be sentenced to death. Moses said so. What have you to say, Master?" Jesus had stopped speaking at the tumultuous arrival of the Pharisees. He looks at the pack of angry men with piercing eyes and then lowers them on the depressed woman thrown at his feet. He is silent. Still sitting, he bends, and with his finger he begins to write on the stones of the porch, which are covered with the dust raised by the wind. While they speak, he writes, "Master, we're speaking to you. Listen to us. Reply to us. Have you not understood? This woman has been caught in the very act of committing adultery. In her house, in the bed of her husband, she has polluted it with her lechery. Jesus is writing. But this man is a fool. Don't you see that he doesn't understand anything? That he's drawing signs on the dust like a poor fool? Master, for the sake of your name, speak. Let your wisdom reply to our question. We repeat, this woman lacked nothing. She had clothes, food, love. And she has been unfaithful. Jesus is writing. She lied to the man who trusted her. With mendacious lips, she said goodbye to him and went to the door with him smiling. And she then opened the secret door and let her lover in. And while her husband was away working for her, she wallowed in her lewdness like an unclean animal. Master, she is a desecrator of the law, as well as of her nuptial bed. She is a rebel, an impious person, a blasphemer. Jesus is writing. He writes, then cancels with his sandal-shod foot what he has written, and writes further on, turning round slowly to find more room. He looks like a little boy playing, but what he writes are not playful words. He has written successively, usurer, false, irreverent son, fornicator, murderer, desecrator of the law, thief, sexually impulsive, usurper, unworthy husband and father, blasphemer, rebellious to God, adulterer. The words are written over and over again while fresh accusers speak. Well, Master, your opinion. This woman is to be judged. She must not contaminate the earth with her weight. Her breath is poison that upsets hearts. Jesus stands up. Goodness gracious, what a face. His eyes flash like lightning, striking the accusers. He holds his head so upright that he looks even taller. And he is so severe and solemn that he seems a king on his throne. His mantle has fallen off one shoulder, forming a short train behind him. But he doesn't mind that. With stern countenance and not even the least trace of a smile on his lips or in his eyes, he glares at the crowds, who withdraw as they would before two sharp blades. He stares at them one by one with such searching intensity that frightens. Those who are stared at try to withdraw into the crowd and hide there. The circle thus widens and breaks up as if it were excavated by an occult power. He finally speaks. If there is one of you who has not sinned, let him be the first to throw a stone at her. His voice sounds like thunder, while his eyes flash even more brightly. Jesus has folded his arms across his chest and remains thus, as straight as a judge, waiting. His eyes give no peace. They search, penetrate, and accuse. First one, then two, then five. Then in groups, all the people present go away with lowered heads. Not only the scribes and the Pharisees, but also those who were previously around Jesus and others who had approached him to hear his opinion and the carrying out of the sentence. Both the former and the latter had joined together to abuse the guilty woman and demand her stoning. Jesus is left alone with Peter and John. I do not see the other apostles. Jesus has resumed writing while the flight of the accusers is taking place, and he now writes, Pharisees, vipers, sepulchres of rottenness, liars, traitors, enemies of God, revilers of his word. When the court is completely empty with a solemn silence, only the rustling of the wind and the murmur of a little fountain in a corner can be heard. Jesus raises his head and looks. His countenance is now placid. He is sad, but no longer angry. He casts a look at Peter, who has moved away a little, leaning against a column, and then at John, who, almost behind Jesus, looks at him with his loving eyes. Jesus smiles slightly, looking at Peter, and more brightly when he looks at John. Two different smiles. He then looks at the woman, still prostrated and weeping at his feet. He gets up, adjusts his mantle as if he were about to set off. He beckons to the two apostles to go to the exit. When he is alone, he calls the woman. "Woman, look at me." He repeats his order because she dare not look up. "Woman, we are alone. Look at me." The poor wretch raises her face, turned by tears and dust, into a mask of dejection. In a low voice, full of gravity and pity, Jesus says, "Woman, where now are those who were accusing you?" His head and body are bent slightly forward towards so much misery, and his eyes are full of an indulgent, restoring expression. "Did no one condemn you?" The woman replies, sobbing, "No one, Master." "Neither do I condemn you. Go and do not sin any more. Go home and behave in such a way that you may be forgiven by God and by the man you offended. And do not trespass on the gentleness of the Lord. Go." Jesus helps her to get up, taking her by the hand. He does not bless, neither does he greet her with the salutation of peace. He watches her go away, her head lowered and staggering slightly in her shame. And when she disappears, he sets off himself with the two disciples. Jesus says to Maria Vultorta, "I am the Son who became incarnate and died to bring you forgiveness and love. I am mercy. I am love. I am forgiveness. I am compassion. I defended the adulteress, not because her sin seemed slight to me, but because the ones accusing her were not sinless. And one cannot condemn when one is not sinless. I taught you this by that act. I forgave the great sinners that the gospel makes known to you. For to forgive is to provide time to be redeemed. I forgave my crucifiers because they did not know what they were doing. They were intoxicated with the ferment of their passions. All who err are intoxicated with some wicked passion. This does not justify them in their evil action, but mercy grants forgiveness to give them time and assistance to emerge from their error. Oh, if the Spirit elucidates to you the sentence, 'Go in peace and do not sin,' those words are really a reward for those who have not sinned. They are encouragement for those who are still weak but do not want to sin. They are forgiveness for repentant souls and a mild, merciful reproach for those who show only a shadow of repentance. And it is only a sentence, and one of the most simple ones. But how many there are in my gospel, how many which, like flower buds after a shower and springtime sunshine, open in large numbers on the branch where there was only one, and cover it all to the joy of those who admire it." Jesus asks us to be gentle with those who are being punished for their sins. Who is without sin? If on the wall of the room wherein the thoughts of man germinate, that is, on man's forehead, God's finger should write the words describing one as one was, is, or will be, very few would bear the word innocent written in bright letters. The other foreheads would bear the words adulterers, murderers, thieves, killers, in letters as green as envy, as black as treason, or as red as crime. So, without being proud, be merciful to your brothers, who, from a human point of view, have been less fortunate than you are. They are now on galleys, expiating what you do not expiate, although guilty of the same crime. Your humility will improve by being merciful and expiating.